Well, welcome to Public Health Out Loud, public health for the public. So today's episode, SARS-CoV-2, the great disruptor. So it's a very different America. And did public health, business, and politics meet the demands of COVID-19? So I am Dr. Jim McDonald.
And I'm Dr. Philip Chan.
And just want to tell you, we're recording today's episode on a historic day, which is November 3rd, 2020. So we don't know the outcome of any elections today. And I don't know that that's really going to come up in our podcast today, but I just want to note the day as a rather historic day, and we're going to go from there. And I want to get back to another historic concept, which is SARS-CoV-2. The virus, I just want to remind of us of the acronym. So Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome Coronavirus 2. The disease is called COVID-19, which is coronavirus 2019. You know, it's an understatement to say this virus has turned the world upside down, inside out, and everything in between. You know, this virus, which disrupts everything inside and out, is unforgettable. It has changed the United States in ways we could not have predicted. And this virus has been a great disruptor and, quite frankly, a demander, and continues to disrupt and demand. Yet there are some facilitators, good and bad, and we're going to talk about some of those today.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of those. You know, for me personally, Dr. McDonald, it's, you know, a lot of, I guess some in retrospect expected, some unexpected. So for example, I was just reminded as we were talking about this, you know, I had tried to go and purchase a bread maker, right, on Amazon, and all the bread makers were sold out. All the sewing machines were sold out. Just a lot of different things that, you know, sewing machines because of the need to make masks. It was just, some of this was a reality check for me, just in thinking about the little subtle ways, you know, that this pandemic has affected our lives. Like the whole toilet paper thing, right? It's like all these sort of supplies, and I know we'll talk about this, but this pandemic really has had a huge effect on our personal life.
Yeah, I think you really get to that issue about the day-to-day disruption. You know, one of the things I was thinking about was how it disrupted just the concept for me of personal space. So, you know, interesting too, it disrupted the concept of just what's on my face. So face masks, facial coverings, you know, it was intended to be a public health intervention. Unexpectedly, it became a political statement, which I still don't quite frankly fully understand how this happened. And I have to just admit, I didn't see this coming here. You know, when I think about staying 6 feet apart from people, that disrupted how I sat next to people, you know, whether it was in church, whether it was at the office, whether it was just in social settings, whether it was going to work, whether it was getting together with extended family. That's where it was the most weird for me. Like when I would go visit my mom and dad, it would be so normal just to hug, but to be 6 feet apart was the right thing to do. So that's very disruptive. But how have those things impacted your daily life? What did you see with that?
Yeah, I think similar to you, Dr. McDonald, is that really these ingrained aspects of infection control are really a daily part of my life, too. You know, it's interesting. Every car I pass, you know, I see face masks now hanging from the mirror, right? You know, that's where I hang mine as well. You know, before I leave the house, you know, I'm, you know, keys, wallet, you know, phone, right? The necessities. But now face mask, right? Hand sanitizer. These things like face masks and hand sanitizers have really become essential items. And I'm guessing maybe it's the same for you.
You know, very much so. It's interesting. Like I didn't see myself buying sports memorabilia this year in the form of facial covering, but that's just what I did. So like I'm a Met fan and I bought 3 Met masks, and because I wanted to make my Met fandom kind of original or at least unique or personalized to me. You know, I had one mask that I would wear when the Mets were playing away games, another mask when they were playing home games, and I had another one where they were Sunday games. It was just kind of a fun little thing for me. And I just have to say that it was more of that disruption. Like, how could anyone have predicted that market demand for cloth face masks in the form of sports memorabilia was really going to be a hot item in 2020? And you know, when I think about logos and things like that, it's just very disruptive. I mean, you know, what are your thoughts about this, about accessorizing? How do you see this?
Yeah, I think it's great, actually. You know, it's great that it's become accepted, that people are thinking about them, right? That they're, you know, matching and, you know, using colors that match the rest of their outfit. So in general, it's a great thing. You know, question for you. Do you match your mask to your outfit, Dr. McDonald?
You know, I try to. It's interesting. Like, I like the medical procedure mask. That's my go-to mask when I'm going somewhere. As much as I have my Mets cloth masks, you know, if I'm going to be going to work or something like that, I'm going to be working all day, a lot of times going to wear that blue medical procedure mask, you know, for a couple reasons. One, it's designed for people to wear. It's comfortable. It's designed to be breathable. So I just like that. And sometimes when I'm going out in public, like if I'm going to Walmart or Home Depot or somewhere there's going to be a crowd of people, I actually might wear an N95, which offers me some protection. I'm going to be around a lot more people and I can't always control. But it really gets me thinking about how nationally we would be, I think, in a much better place if we had an N95 mask for everybody. In other words, one of the things that I have as a healthcare provider is knowledge of, one, what an N95 mask is, two, I've been fit tested for one, and three, I knew how to wear it. And those were big pluses to me. But I think one of the things that I think is a real shortcoming is we didn't have N95 masks for the general public. And it really gets this larger issue about national preparedness. And I think you see too how the virus really disrupted national supply. I mean, I didn't see a shortage of N95 masks coming across our nation. I just didn't see that. And when we went in Rhode Island to get our national stockpile, we found out all we were going to get was 25% of our supply. There wasn't the other 75%. That was a real moment for me during the pandemic. And it was really very just like telling as a moment, because it was all of a sudden really reinforcing this concept that no one else is coming, Rido. You got to figure this out on your own. What about you?
Yeah, so that surprised me as well. I think, in my training and experience as a healthcare provider, physician, you know, I think masks are always one of those things that we've taken for granted in retrospect, right? There's always a mask available. Granted, the demand, certainly during a pandemic, has risen exponentially. And as you mentioned, the supply chains just haven't come through. But, you know, as I've reflected, I think I've always taken sort of the masks for granted, certainly in the hospital. You know, you come across a patient, there's always a mask available in the hospital prior to COVID when you needed it. And now they've certainly drilled down a little bit more in terms of supply chains and becoming more more rare at the moment. So, you know, the supply chains are picking up, which is good. But let me ask you this, Dr. McDonald. I mean, we've talked about a couple different, there's several different types of masks out there, right? You mentioned the N95, there's surgical masks, cloth masks, there's these gator masks, right? Where people have like these neck fleece that they kind of just put over their nose and face. And then there's face shields, which aren't a mask, but just a face shield. How do you think about these different types of masks?
You know, it's interesting. Like, I think first thing, I'm an acronym person. I mean, I don't like acronyms is what I'm trying to say here. But I'm curious about acronyms because one of the things about them is I always like to know what the acronym actually stands for. But the N95, the N stands for not resistant to oil, which I don't know is super relevant to anybody right now. But the thing about N95s is they're really designed to protect me, the healthcare provider. And when I'm working in the healthcare space, they work really great and they protect me from airborne viral particles or by droplet transmission. So I see them as really valuable. And it is good as a healthcare provider, I can have that. Because if I'm going to be around someone who's sick, multiple people who are sick throughout my workday, you know, it's really important to me to have that personal protection. Now, the surgical mask, which is a lot more comfortable, is what you typically associate with a surgeon doing an operation, ties on the back of my head. It's a pretty good mask, but it really protects the patient from me. It's called source control. And if you just think about it this way, it's like the reason the surgeon's wearing a surgical mask during the operation isn't so you can be like, I don't know who that was who did that operation. I mean, it was more so like, I don't want to have my respiratory droplets float down into your incision and then cause you to have a post-operative infection. And that's why surgical masks were really important and why they're used. The gator mask, I have to tell you, I didn't even know these things existed. I no idea what these things were. Even for the first few weeks they're out there, I was like, what are we talking about? And it's really just a tube that goes over your neck and you slide it up and down. It's comfortable. But those I worry about sometimes, if they're not multi-layered, although they're comfortable, they may not really give you effective source control. And then face shields, I get why people like them. It's like wearing a big pair of glasses, covers your whole face, but it doesn't really give you source control. In other words, your respiratory droplets, which are coming out, are still going out and around. So those are kind of an overview of some of those masks. But Dr. Chan, how effective are masks? I mean, what do you think about these masks we have out there?
Yeah, so there's been a whole lot of literature and published science about this over the last few months, which is fantastic, really contributed to our understanding of how to control this pandemic. I think to your point about gaiters, you know, masks and neck fleece, I mean, one thing that the evidence has shown is that these may actually be worse, right? And the way that I think about it is, as you mentioned, for source control, is that these masks, when people wear masks, they're protecting other people, because as you cough or sneeze, the mask is catching these larger droplets that are spreading the virus, right? So what we have seen and what some of the literature shows is that with neck fleece or these gaiter masks is that they're porous enough such that when you cough or sneeze, you're actually shooting out smaller droplet particles that actually float longer and move further in the air and may actually be therefore more infectious than actually not even wearing a gaiter or a neck fleece at all, you know, better than wearing nothing. So our science of this is really evolving, and it's been interesting to watch. So at the end of the day, as Dr. McDonald mentioned, really thinking about an N95, a surgical mask, or even a cloth mask, and really staying away from the gaiters or neck fleeces. I do want to point out there was, and again, as there's been some emerging science about this, but there's one well-published study in The Lancet, which is one of the top medical journals in our field, that showed that the chance of transmission without a face mask or an N95 mask was around 17-18%, but that fell to 3% when the mask was worn. And this is an example of how masks are really effective and why we here in Rhode Island, other states, other countries in the world have really pushed a mask. And also why we shouldn't make it a political statement. I mean, wearing a mask is science, evidence-based. You just got to wear a mask during a pandemic, and it's going to protect you, it's going to protect others, and it's going to make the world a safer place.
You know, and as we think about masking, I'm just thinking about how disruptive the virus has been too, but I really want to get back to this notion about physical distancing. And the virus continues to disrupt our space between each other. So Dr. Chan, how has this concept of physical distancing impacted your life?
You know, that's an interesting question. I personally think about it all the time. I think it actually annoys my wife. But when out in public, it's one of those constant things. You know, as a physician, I found that I tend to be a perfectionist in a bunch of my work. And I think I've applied that to physical distancing. It's like, you know, at any one time, I'm very aware of who's in my personal space. And the science supports this. And again, similar to masks, you know, the chance of transmission when someone is at a distance of a meter or less, and that's about 3.3 feet, was about 13%, again, in another well-done study. And that fell to about a transmission risk of 2.6% when someone was more than a meter away. And so in thinking about that 6 feet, I mean, it's really another one of those key infection control approaches, making sure that you're at least 6 feet away, being aware of who's in your personal space.
You know, it's interesting when I think about just social distancing, I sometimes wish we had used the word physical distancing because we never intended people to be unfriendly toward each other. And I think sometimes when you say be socially distanced, it can be a little bit misconstrued that really what we meant was we just want you to be 6 feet apart. Because like you said, the data supports be a little farther apart. And you know, 6 feet isn't that big a deal. So you know, one of the ways I think about this, and I'm just kind of being candid about my life, in practical terms, the only person that's really within 6 feet of me on any regular basis is my wife. You know, I have kids, but they're older and they're just moving around my house, but they're not really sitting next to me anymore. They're not little guys who are coming up and hugging their dad anymore. So, you know, I think from my perspective, I really make it a point to be more than 6 feet apart from people, wherever I am, whether I'm at Home Depot doing some shopping, whether at Walmart, or whether I'm out and about in town, I just really try to be more than 6 feet away, even when I'm hiking, quite frankly. I just keep everyone at multiple arms length away. And it kind of makes me think a little bit though about how being 6 feet apart, it's a personal infection prevention strategy that actually protects me and protects others. And that's a strategy. But when I think about all the places I'm going now where I'm shopping differently, I'm actually shopping differently now. And I think one of the things I think about is, it does affect how business and the economy is perceived in our future and in our present right now. And you know, one of the things I think about, like, you know, I know the economy is still being sorted out, but you know, it's obvious the pandemic has cost our country trillions, which I can't even contemplate how big the number of trillions are. I mean, gross domestic product declined, not just in the United States the first two quarters, but really all over the world. So Dr. Chan, how do you explain all this? I mean, what are your thoughts as you start thinking about how the disruptor, this SARS-CoV-2 disruptive virus, has really affected business and the economy? What are your thoughts?
I think to your point, Dr. McDonald, is that we really have seen wide-ranging impact of SARS-CoV-2, certainly on our local, national, international job markets. And, you know, it's interesting to me how certain markets have really exploded, right? If I were going to buy stocks at the beginning of the pandemic, I would have invested in Zoom, right? Or even Amazon. And that makes sense in retrospect. But it's also really sad to me. I mean, you see some of these mom and pop local businesses, restaurants, you know, people that have had to close down, and you know, my heart has really gone out to them. And, you know, there's certainly big winners of the pandemic, frankly, when it comes to business, and there's also tremendous losers. And it's really, you know, interesting how there's almost nothing in the middle. People are either really struggling or doing well. What are your thoughts about that, Dr. McDonald?
Yeah, it's interesting. You got me thinking when you talked about Zoom as some of the facilitators that you see in the pandemic. And, you know, I think about the internet, that's the backbone of so much of the facilitators throughout all of the pandemic. And I was thinking about the internet. You know, the internet's still a relatively young technology when you think about just technology in general. It is really young, but it's like having the internet and having Zoom and other technology has really, I think, lessened the pain of the pandemic. Now, this is much different than the 1918 pandemic as far as how we can communicate with each other in real time. And it's really just opened up a lot of different perspectives. And I think about like if I just said to somebody last year, you know, I think I'm going to work from home. I'm going to be more efficient, by the way. I'm going to be actually celebrated for working at home because I'll be protecting my fellow employees. And, you know, I'll be able to be a role model by working from home. And yet I might be even in my jammies when I'm doing it or sweats and like I'm not wearing ties anymore. I mean, it's just interesting to me how working from home has really changed it. Although I have to say sometimes I really don't know that I'm working from home as much as I'm living at work because I've seen it blurred my personal life too. It's interesting as I walk from upstairs to downstairs, I'm in my home office. It just changes how I view work now. I just might stroll in on a weekend where I normally wouldn't have gone to work on a weekend. I stroll in early in the morning. I stroll in late at night. Sometimes I have to stay, you know, up late at night working, but it's much easier since I'm at home. You know, I can run around, say hello to my kids, talk to my wife. It's just more comfortable working home. But Dr. Chan, how do you see some of these facilitators of our pandemic?
You know, it's interesting. I mentioned sort of at the beginning, bread makers, right? Things that you do at home, things unexpected. I was also reminded about, you know, early in the pandemic, I went out, you know, I was thinking I have kids, right? A 9-year-old, 13-year-old. I'm like, well, we're stuck at home. You know what? I'm going to go out and buy a new video game system. I tried to go out and buy a new Nintendo, couldn't find one. Amazon, you know, anywhere, all sold out. Lately, we actually have thought about getting some cats. We've started to look at some of the shelters and other pet stores, and they're also all out of stock of cats. So interestingly, just things that people have gravitated towards during the pandemic all makes sense totally. And as you mentioned, anything online has really been, you know, hot through the roof. Obviously, Amazon, other shipping services, and also takeout food. I've noticed that a lot of the restaurants that have done takeout food have really are doing better, certainly than those that have had dining in services. But takeout anything has really been certainly a great facilitator during this pandemic. I think some of the losers too, unfortunately, things like travel vacation, things that I miss, things that I'm looking forward to. I know, you know, I was reading an article the other day about movie theaters, right? And you know, the airlines, et cetera. So hopefully those come back, certainly as we start to get the pandemic under control, certainly hopefully in the future when we have a vaccine, some of those sectors will come roaring back.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk about Zoom and internet and travel. And, you know, one of the things I was just thinking about how this has all changed, you know, and I was thinking how, you know, it's funny, when I was a kid, Zoom was a television show on public broadcasting that I would watch rarely, but it certainly wasn't what I thought it would ever be. But what's interesting now, when I think about meetings at work, like when I go to meetings now at work, it's always through either Microsoft Teams, WebEx, or Zoom, where it's interesting when I think about work, multitasking now is expected. So when I'm in a meeting now, it's expected. I'm checking email, I'm going to the meeting, I'm getting a text or two, I'm on mute, I might even handle a phone call. So it's multitasking is now expected. Now, prior, you know, if I was at the office with everybody else sitting around a table, this would be considered extremely rude Whereas now it's just, this is the norm. This is what's expected now. And what's now socially acceptable is if someone asks me a question during a meeting, I can know, I don't have to worry about being embarrassed. I just say, oh, I was multitasking. And everybody was like, oh, no worries. I was doing it too. So it's just interesting how work is changing quite a bit. And I think it's interesting to me how just going to a meeting has changed quite a bit. And it's interesting how the technology has actually facilitated this to minimize the disruption. I mean, Dr. Chan, what are your thoughts about that?
In the business world, right, they talk about synchronous versus asynchronous communication with people. And it's interesting, similar to you, I'm always on my email, right? I have like 20 lines of communication open at any one time. But I agree with you. It's interesting how this has changed the dynamics of how we engage with people, how we communicate with people, both in our work setting and also personally as well. And I think this leads also to some of these supply chain issues and other business issues. I mean, what are your thoughts, Dr. McDonald, about what we've seen with the supply chains? I know you touched on it a little bit with the PPE.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was surprised about the supply chain issues. Like, I just have to admit, like, when I was walking in, well, before the pandemic hit Rhode Island, I was walking in Walmart in January, and there was more Scotch toilet paper than I can ever possibly imagine on pallets and pallets and pallets. And it was just sort of, you know, it's funny. I was up by the dairy section getting ready to go down to check out, and I just have never seen too much Scott's toilet paper. And these were 20 packs of 1,000 sheet rolls. I'm thinking like, I just said to myself, and who is ever going to buy all this toilet paper? I did not see this coming. So I still wonder now, what did Walmart know that I did not know? Because obviously they had some intel on this that I didn't know here. But I was surprised by that. I was surprised too by the personal protective equipment shortages. In other words, the PPE shortages, the N95s in particular. And it's not an indictment of national preparedness on any one administration. I don't ever want to be political, but I do think we just have to say through multiple administrations, like every family that has ever had that balanced checkbook, decisions were made not to make the stockpile robust when it came to pandemic preparedness. And it's like, you know, I'll say this, like there's an old expression, you got caught with your pants down. But when it came to the pandemic in the United States, we weren't even wearing pants. We were that unprepared for it. And it's phenomenal to me how we've gone the way we've gone. But it was interesting when you saw the hand sanitizer shortages, and then you saw the shortages for the ingredients of hand sanitizer for people who wanted to make their own. And I think it gets to this issue of there weren't just shortages, but you could see supply chain shortages all the way through. And one of the things that got me thinking of was like, you know, these are what supply chains are. And it reminds me, you know, this virus is just keeps disrupting. And so what do you think? I mean, is the virus controllable? Let's talk about that a little bit. Like, I mean, you heard some comments about the virus not being controllable. Is this virus controllable for a nation now? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I love about you, Dr. McDonald, is your endless supply of witty quotes. And I'm being serious about that. And I think one thing that you mentioned early on to me in the pandemic that has always stuck with me in thinking about these shortages, PPE, you know, testing, which we haven't talked about, but testing supplies has been another shortage, is you go to war with the army you have. And I do feel like we've been fighting this pandemic with two hands tied behind our back. And I think, you know, when the pandemic ends, and I say when, not if, we're going to have a lot of reflection to do. And I think one of the things we're going to have to reflect upon is what do we want to make sure to shore up with our manufacturing sector, right? There are, I think we've learned that there are certain key things that we need in the United States to be able to manufacture potentially on a moment's notice to address some of these, you know, potential issues of national security, including pandemics. You know, it's that balance, I think, to your point of, you know, these masks and these supplies also expire. So it's sort of this balance of having things on hand, but importantly, I think being able to manufacturing them. And I think that's one thing that we're gonna have to look at certainly at the end of the pandemic.
I wanna shift our conversation a little bit right now to some what other countries have been doing. And I think it's important just to see that, you know, the United States doesn't live in a vacuum and the pandemic doesn't occur in a vacuum. So what did other countries do? I think about China, how they approached the pandemic at the beginning. Shut a lot of things down, geared up testing, but they've largely controlled it inside their country. Then I compare that with South Korea, did isolated shutdowns, very surgical approach, a lot of testing right away. I think about Taiwan, which was a little bit even more avant-garde, a lot of testing right away, really strict enforcement of isolation, very strict enforcement of quarantine, but really didn't shut much down at all. Which, you know, I think that's very different. I mean, what did you see with how other countries were handling the pandemic?
Yeah, so I think to your point, I think a lot of countries have handled it a little bit more aggressively than the United States. You look at countries like China. I mean, China at the moment is doing well, but when they have cases in a city, I mean, they essentially, test everyone. Cities, millions of people, they're doing incredibly broad-based testing, and I think that's one thing that we've also seen in some of the European countries and other countries is really access to testing. And I think we're getting there here in the United States. That's one thing that has surprised me as well, is just sort of our slow response to ramping up testing in general. But and as you mentioned, there's been shortages certainly with testing supplies. And I think we're getting there. We're getting there with innovative testing approaches. We're talking about pooled specimen. We're talking about saliva. There's all these rapid point of care testing. So I think we're getting there, but it's been a little bit slow.
It has been a challenge. And I think, one of the things about the United States of America is I feel like in many ways we become the divided states of America. I think part of having so much just different points of view of how to manage the pandemic has really gotten us in a bit of a bind here, because I think we're really struggling with trying to find a coherent preventive approach. And I think that's one of the big weaknesses of the United States responses. We really have had different states approaching it differently. And I'm seeing now regions of the country coalescing into, coherent responses, which I think is good. But it does seem like there really needs to be more of a united front when it comes to managing the pandemic. And one of the things that I just want to shift again to in another part of our conversation is just getting back to some of the disruption the pandemic has caused. And it's really affected just everyone's lives personally. It's hard to go through the pandemic and not be shocked by it. But when you think about just access to healthcare, like whether it's mental health care or preventive health care, Dr. Chan, what have you noticed in that space at all? What have you seen with access to preventive health care and just mental health care in the United States during this?
Yeah, so it's been a tough time for everyone. And I think, one of the issues that has emerged, as you're alluding to, is mental health, especially. And, for example, depression, right? Before the pandemic, depression was common. And I know that you've certainly seen it. I've seen it in my practice. And, based on CDC stats, the number of adults over 18 who had regular feelings of depression was around 5%. And recent studies have really shown that nearly a quarter of people in the US at this point during the pandemic are experiencing depression. And that's nearly three times the number before the pandemic began. And I think unsurprisingly, those with lower income, smaller savings, people that have been more adversely affected by the pandemic in terms of business and economy are experiencing worse depressions. And I think that also leads us to today. So we are, today is an election day. What are your thoughts, Dr. McDonald, about how COVID-19 is affecting, has affected, is affecting the election and politics in general?
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if we, telemedicine got big, but has this become a tele-election in some ways? I voted by mail for the first time in a long time. Of course, when I was in the Navy in Japan, I would vote by mail, absentee ballot, but a lot of people voted by mail. And I think it's interesting how people are looking now at voting and differently about how to reduce barriers to voting, which I think is great. And I think it gets to one of those things where it's like, how do we make our life not be disrupted by the pandemic, but actually facilitated by the pandemic? And I think one of the benefits of this is I think we're going to see record voter turnout this year, which is a win for everybody. As much as everybody might be worried about the outcome of the election, I'm excited about the passion we've seen. And largely just to a large degree, peaceful passion. There's been some spots where not so peaceful, but I think you've seen a lot of Americans really engaged in the electoral process. I think it's going to help our country to be more represented, which I think is a plus. And I think it really speaks to this large issue about how do we get back to a country that can unite ourselves and really stay focused on being united. And if, political differences aside, I think one of the things that'd be really good to be united on is a pandemic response that's coherent. And I think for just the country, it's like looking at simple public health interventions like, yeah, this virus has disrupted our lives. It surely has disrupted, but there's been some facilitators. The internet's made this a lot less painful. It's also the technology that we have has made this a lot less painful. The fact that we can acquire groceries through the mail or just simply pick them up at the store. There's a lot of things that are just quite frankly disrupting our lives, but in some ways, we're going to be stronger because of it. And so when I think about some of the minor inconveniences like staying 6 feet apart from folks, keeping my hands clean, wearing a mask, making sure my indoor air quality is optimized in buildings, I don't think those are awful trade-offs for the victories that are going to come you know, in the long run. I mean, Dr. Chan, as we're close to winding up here, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think for me personally, totally 100% agree with you. And I think that for me, I'd like to hear, see more of a focus as we move forward in this country on facts and evidence. And I think that, you know, this whole concept of fake news has really, really been disappointing to me. I think it's really discouraging. At the end of the day, when you go see your doctor or whoever, you really want, you know, certainly your physician to be basing your medical care on facts. What has worked for other people? What do the studies show? And this whole discourse about fake news and focus and everything's fake news now, and you don't know what to believe. To me, the one thing that I wish that the country, that we as a people would really start to focus on is asking the right questions, asking for facts, asking for the evidence, and then using that to inform our way forward, not just with the pandemic, frankly, but with our daily American life in general.
Yeah, I love that. I think as you look at facts and look at the future, it's time to look at your personal life, like what can be different. Like one of the things my wife and I were talking about last couple of days is just how do we live in this world differently? And one of the things we're doing is some practical conversations is just looking at our normal life and just say, do we need these assumptions to stay true? One assumption is we've always said two cars, but with me working from home, do we really need two cars? Can I deploy those funds towards something else like travel? But yet, as I look at travel, I see now there's this new product out called Amazon Explore. You know, for a small fee, I can be anywhere in the world and get a guided tour. That's very interesting to me. And I think part of what I'm looking at is looking at the world in front of me, being optimistic of what the future holds and seeing, you know what, as much as there's been disruption, there's opportunity and there's benefit if we're out there to go get it. I think this has been a fun conversation today. I want to close this up a little bit. And I think it's important just to say I'm optimistic about our future. Dr. Chan, what are your final thoughts? What's your moments to close us with today?
So I will close this again on a moment of Zen, something for us to consider throughout the course of our day here. Something that I've been considering certainly during this election season. And here it is, an old proverb, let go or be dragged, let go or be dragged. So thank you all and be well.